Welcome to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. You know, it's the summer, baby. When you're talking soccer and baseball in hour number one, you know, we are in the midst of it. NBA free agency starts tonight. Wimbledon starts tomorrow morning. Zachary Cohen going to kill two birds with one stone with Zach Cohen. We'll talk a little NBA. We'll talk a little Wimbledon. He's going to hang out with us for two segments coming up in less than 15 minutes. How did the books fare? Remember the book fair? It's always a fun day at school. How did the books fare last night? Thomas Gable with the latest from behind the counter in hour number three. And we'll check in with Todd Furman from the Bet the Board podcast also in hour number three. But as I mentioned early on in the show, we are 70 days away from the start of the NFL season. Actually, that's not true. We're 70 days away from the first NFL Sunday. The first day you sit back and you watch a full card of NFL action. The season starts September 4th with Dallas and Philadelphia. Then on Friday night down in Brazil, it'll be Kansas City and the Chargers. And then Sunday is when we get that loaded card, 70 days away from the first NFL Sunday. And looking over my shoulder as I pull out a little trusty prop, because we got the Circa Survivor. And right now, 1,467 folks have signed up for Circa Survivor. 15 million guaranteed this year. We eclipsed 10 million guaranteed last year with over 1,400 entries. Last year, Circa Survivor had 14,266 entries, but it was absolute carnage the first couple of weeks. I was part of the documentary, the race to $14.2 million, which will be coming out here in a couple of months, I believe. And thinking back to getting interviewed after I did Live Bet Sunday or did the tailgate show with Rich Gannon, you would project what the day was going to look like. And I wanted to take this time, and look, we've got the whole summer to look at it, but I was curious what our tactics should be for week number one. Because think back to last year. Once again, 14,266 entries a year ago. 4,895 were on the Cincinnati Bengals in week one. Do you recall what happened? Cincinnati Bengals were 7.5-point favorites against the New England Patriots, and they lost to the New England Patriots 16-10. The following week, it was the Baltimore Ravens against the Las Vegas Raiders in Baltimore. That was the number one selection. Baltimore had lost the season opener to Kansas City, extended rest, yada, yada, yada. Raiders went to Baltimore and beat the Ravens. And then in week three was a mayhem. I believe the top five selections were all eliminated, including the Cincinnati Bengals. We didn't know it at the time how good the Washington Commanders would ultimately be, but the Cincinnati Bengals wreaked havoc as 95% of the 14,000 and change were eliminated 3 weeks in to Circa Survivor. So looking ahead to this year, looking at week one, is there an obvious selection to make? Do you dare trust the Cincinnati Bengals again on the road in a division game? Week one, Cincinnati at Cleveland, one of the biggest spreads on the board. It's sitting at 5.5. I would go ahead and say no. We've seen it before. Division games can get weird. Road games can get weird. And Cincinnati, after they were the absolute villain to Circa Survivor entries a year ago, could you go back to the well with Cincinnati in week number one? They will not be, I will call it right now, they will not be the number one selection. I'm sure there will be some folks who take it. And here's the thing too, right? We are going to get over 15,000 entries into this thing. We are tracking in that direction. I know Mike Palm is much better at giving us the projections of where we are headed. Derek has guaranteed $15 million for Circa Survivor. I fully anticipate after 14,000 plus last year, there to be over 15,000 entries this year. So that's always the interesting mindset of what to do in week one. Do you zag or do you just kind of hold on for dear life, hope that the most popular selection makes it through? So looking at the week one board, the biggest favorites are Washington, -6.5 against the Giants, division game. Cleveland, Cincinnati, -5.5 at Cleveland. And now remember, if you're new to Circa Survivor, if you're one of our many listeners on our terrestrial affiliates or on SiriusXM channel 158, and you are new to the Circa Survivor, I'm just telling you what the point spreads are. You obviously don't need to cover, just need to win. That's all you need to do, and then you don't get to use them again. Washington, -6.5. Cincinnati, -5.5. Arizona, -6. Division game. Not a division game, a conference game. Arizona on the road at New Orleans. Is that going to be a very popular selection? Do people dare in week one go with a road team in Arizona? But it's against New Orleans, thought to be one of the worst, if not the worst team entering 2025. I would imagine the number one selection, week number one, will be Denver. Denver's a 7.5-point favorite. They're at home, facing a rookie quarterback in Cam Ward. If I'm looking into the crystal ball 10 weeks from today, when we see the tweet come out from Circa Sports, it'll be Denver as the number one selection. If you're in Circa Survivor with over 15,000 projected entries, do you go chalk? Do you just try to survive? What would be some other potential options? The ones I would remove would certainly be Washington against the Giants, because you have to remember this too. The unique wrinkle of Circa Survivor, which is so much different than any other Survivor. Now look, if you're in the Grandissimo, the high roller one, I think you just go chalk and you don't necessarily, in my opinion, and I will not be in the $100,000 pool Grandissimo, but I don't think you just necessarily roll with, I've got to save these teams for Christmas and Thanksgiving. But for Circa Survivor, you do. You have to plan a little bit ahead. And the unique wrinkle, as we've had for a couple of years for Circa Survivor, is that Thanksgiving and Black Friday are their own week. And then Christmas is its own week. So what are those Thanksgiving games? Green Bay at Detroit, Kansas City at Dallas, Cincinnati at Baltimore, Chicago at Philadelphia. So the obvious one you would imagine to hold back would be Philadelphia at home, Black Friday against Chicago. And then you've got Christmas games, Dallas at Washington, Detroit at Minnesota, Denver at Kansas City. So if you're looking at the Circa Survivor week one board, do you remove Washington because they have that home game against Dallas on Christmas? I just don't like playing division rivals. We saw the Giants be a little pesky against Washington a year ago. So I would not use Washington even if they weren't on Christmas, but I think them being on Christmas is that unique wrinkle. I think the two that will probably be the most utilized, I think Denver will be number one, but then you have to remember Denver does play on Christmas. Granted, it's on the road at Kansas City, but do you hold back Denver for that Christmas game, or do you just survive in advance? That's what I love about Circa Survivor. It is so unique. You can map it out the whole season. And then, as we saw with a team like Washington a year ago, we didn't know how good they were going to be. Their preseason win total was 6.5. They won 12 games. They went to the NFC Championship game. So you're going to get a team that's going to be better than anticipated. And I know people have done this in years past where you're like, you find that team, you're going to fade them every week. Well, unless they're the Cleveland Browns from, you know, Hugh Jackson era, probably not going to get a winless team. Is New Orleans going to be that team that you fade regularly? I would say if I were in it, Denver, Arizona, probably the two. And it would just, to me, it would be tough to go with a road team in week number one in Arizona. But then you're going with Denver, which similarly to what it was last year with Cincinnati, which was the clear choice for week number one against New England, and they went out and lost the damn game. And 4,800 folks were out in week number one because of Cincinnati losing at home as a 7-point favorite against the New England Patriots. But we are 70 days away from our first full NFL Sunday. Our NFL betting guide, by the way, is coming out this week. Tuesday, our NFL betting guide will be out with best bets galore. We've talked about a couple of my early bets here on the show, and I did write up a couple. The one that still jumps out to me at the current price is a long shot, but for me, it was Caleb Johnson to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, the former Iowa running back, now a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think he is going to be a bell cow there for this Pittsburgh Steelers team. So that was the one that I wrote up for the betting guide as a long shot bet to come home. We'll talk a little NBA, a little Wimbledon with Zach Cohen. He's going to join us on the other side of the break. But folks, if you're betting on sports, why not try The Races? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races every day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. Sign up at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And make sure you use the promo code VSIN200 to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days up to $200. Once again, the website, firstbet.com. The promo code is VSIN200. Zach Cohen going to join us, recap what we saw earlier this week in the NBA draft, get some thoughts on best bets over across the pond at Wimbledon. We'll do that next right here on the VSIN Weekend Morning Line. Sunday morning, Tim Murray with you here on the VSIN Weekend Morning Line as we get ready for another busy day. Wimbledon starts tomorrow. NBA free agency is starting tonight, and we do have some breaking news as LeBron James, according to Shams Charania, is opting in to his $52.6 million player option, that according to Rich Paul. So LeBron James opting in. He will be back this upcoming season for the Los Angeles Lakers. And that leads us into Zachary Cohen, who joins us right now, courtesy of our Progressive Guest Line. We're going to do a double feature here with Zach. We're going to do some Wimbledon on the other side of the break. We'll do some NBA here. This news comes out, I don't think all that surprising, but LeBron James opting in. You know, when you look at the Western Conference, as we all know and as we will discuss all throughout the offseason, incredibly loaded. What's your expectation for this Laker team, who had a good regular season but fizzled out there in the postseason against the Minnesota Timberwolves?
I think they're going to be really good. I've seen some pictures of Luka Doncic. You never know what you can believe, but it looks like he's in really good shape right now. I do think they're going to address the center position. I don't know what they're going to do there. I mean, they're not going to be able to get a Miles Turner, who seems like he's going to be re-signing with the Pacers. But, you know, you bring in a guy like Clint Capella or Brook Lopez, you know, a veteran that can play 10, 15 minutes a night. Maybe not at a high level anymore, but they just need some size. I think we saw that against Minnesota. They were bullied a little bit by Rudy Gobert. And I do think that, you know, just another year kind of gelling together will help them a lot. I like the offensive firepower that they have between Reeves, Luka, and LeBron.
Yeah, Lakers right now 9-1 at DraftKings to win the Western Conference. Same odds as the Denver Nuggets. Zach Cohen joining us courtesy of our Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on social media at Betting on X. You know, let's stick in the Western Conference. The Houston Rockets, obviously, last Sunday, that was when we got the news prior to Game 7, Zach, that they had made the trade for Kevin Durant. So Durant goes in. They're now plus 450 to win the West. Are they overvalued in your eyes, or do you like this fit with KD heading to Houston?
I love the trade for Houston. I just think they didn't give up much to get one of the best scorers in the league. And you could say, you know, he's turning 37 years old. He's still unbelievable. He averaged 28 points per game last year, did it on very, very efficient shooting, as he always does. And he should really fit in seamlessly for a team that needed a floor spacer, needed a guy that can make shots late in the shot clock, and needed, you know, another veteran that they could count on late in game. So I think Durant's going to kind of take their offense to another level. This was a team that was top 10 in the league defensively last year, but needed to be, you know, top 10 offensively to kind of take that next step. I'd be shocked if they're not a top 10 offense with Durant, especially because I think that there's another level that Alperen Sengun can go to now that he won't be the focal point of the opposing team scouting report. Plus 450 is tough to swallow, I think. Just it's not the greatest price in the world pre-flop, but I do think that they are the strongest contender to OKC, and I don't really think the Thunder are going to repeat next year. I still think that there are, you know, some holes with this team. While it's hard to say after they just won the NBA Finals, I do think that the West is winnable.
Yeah, we saw the news today. Jalen Williams, the one that comes off the bench, not the superstar, he has been re-signed there. So once again, the news coming out, not too surprising, but it is official. LeBron James opting into the player option for $52.6 million with the Los Angeles Lakers. Betting on X is where you could follow Zach on social media. He is our senior editor at vsin.com. Zach, you cover and follow the NBA draft as close as anyone that I know. So Cooper Flagg, obviously, goes one. What do we make of that fit, and what do we make of that price around $1.85, -185 to win Rookie of the Year?
So I wouldn't be taking him to win Rookie of the Year. I just think it'll be interesting to kind of see how that narrative unfolds with, you know, Flagg contributing to a winning team, but probably not posting eye-popping numbers compared to a guy like Ace Bailey, who I think can average 17, 18 points per game on a losing team. I think that, you know, it's usually the scorer that tends to win that battle more than the player that's kind of efficiently, you know, contributing to winning. But I do think that Flagg's going to help the Mavericks contend for a title, which it could happen as soon as this year, honestly. I know that Irving is out until the middle of January, early February. But if they can stay afloat in the Western Conference, I think that they have the strongest rotation in the entire NBA. There's obviously a lot of question marks with this team. I mean, you don't know how Irving's going to come back. Anthony Davis is always a risk of getting injured. But they have as good of a rotation as any team in the league to me. And they're closing five of Irving, Max Christie, Cooper Flagg, Anthony Davis, Derek Lively. Like, that is a team that can get the job done on both ends of the floor, has a lot of size, has shot making. And then off the bench, it'd be Klay Thompson, PJ Washington, Daniel Gafford. Like, these are legitimate rotation players, like, that other teams that have no problem playing in a postseason format. So I just think it's a really deep and loaded team, and they're out there at 40-1. I think it's worth a shot. And if they do bring in D'Angelo Russell, that kind of solves your problem with Irving for at least a few months.
Yeah, D'Angelo Russell would be certainly the stopgap, as a lot of teams, as they are, the Mavericks are looking for someone to be at that point guard position. So sticking with Rookie of the Year, we had a good discussion yesterday on the show with Chris Miles from NBA TV. So Cooper Flagg, as mentioned, is a massive favorite, and I would agree with you. I think -$1.85. Let's look around. Let's try to find how to potentially beat Cooper Flagg when it comes to Rookie of the Year. I don't know, maybe you hinted at it. Is Ace Bailey a guy at +950, knowing that he is going to be there playing for the Jazz? We saw the video. He's stepped off the plane. I believe the intro presser is tomorrow. Is Ace Bailey someone you'd be looking at?
Yeah, I think that Ace Bailey is a really good play. I mean, I wasn't really impressed with what he did at Rutgers last year. It was really hard to be. It was a losing team. He had an inefficient season, but he is a very talented scorer. He can kind of score at all three levels, and I really like Will Hardy over there in Utah. I think he's one of the best coaches in the league. So I think that he stepped into a really good situation. I know that he wanted to be in the Eastern Conference playing big minutes, but he's just going to be playing big minutes in the Western Conference. It's not that different. I think he's surrounded by, you know, a pretty good team for him in terms of playing with Collier, who is a pass-first point guard. And I just think there's going to be a lot of opportunity for him. So I'm looking at Bailey at +950. I think Jaeger Demon is worth a sprinkle over there in Brooklyn. I actually like that pick a lot more than the general consensus did. Yeah. I think the Demon is an unbelievable playmaker. If that jumper comes around at all, that's the type of player that's just very good in the NBA. I know that was kind of a weird pick in the minds of many, but 6'9" players that can create like that, and playing for a coach in Jordy Fernandez that has done great work with guards early in his career, dating back to Sacramento when he was an assistant coach, then last year with Brooklyn. I thought that was one of the most well-prepared teams in the league with very little talent. I think they're going to get a lot out of Demon.
Yeah, he is a phenomenal passer, as you alluded to. Does need to get the shot fixed a little bit, but opportunities aplenty there in Brooklyn. Yeah, the guy that we talked about a little bit yesterday, me and Chris Miles, was Trey Johnson. I think he should be one who's going to, the way that he shoots, have an opportunity. I think Ace Bailey, knowing that he's going to be there in Salt Lake, is certainly fascinating. You know, I just want to do a little big picture Eastern Conference with you. We see the trade yesterday of Lonzo Ball going to the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, one thing that we're going to discuss, I'm sure, all throughout the offseason is the Eastern Conference. How wide open is it? The Knicks still don't have a head coach at this point. So when you look at the Eastern Conference, is there a team or teams that you think are worth a little bit of a shot, maybe a little bit further down the odds board?
It's funny because I wrote up futures the day before the Hawks traded for Kristaps Porzingis, and they went from 90-1 to 22-1. But I did grab some Atlanta at 90-1. I would still take that if you could find a 30 or more. I just see that that team is really loaded. When you look at Trae Young being surrounded by just a bunch of 6'8", 6'9" wings that can really play both ends of the floor with Zachary Risacher, Jalen Johnson, Dyson Daniels. I thought that those guys really came on strong last year. And now you add Porzingis to that mix. It's another, you know, floor spacing big that can block shots. I just think that that team has a lot of talent. We have seen Quinn Snyder do some really impressive things in this league as a head coach. So it wouldn't surprise me that if we're looking for sleepers in the Eastern Conference, that's one of the ones that does emerge. And obviously now it doesn't look as big of a sleeper as it did when I said it the other day. I do think the Cavaliers are rightfully favored in the East now. Like I spoke about it with Mike Palm the other day. That is a team that we thought was going to be contending for the NBA title this year. And obviously things didn't work out in the postseason. They got banged up. I liked that trade of getting Lonzo Ball in for Ty Jerome. I know that wasn't the trade, but they are effectively letting Ty Jerome leave, letting Lonzo Ball walk in. Ball's still a really good connected player, still a really good three-point shooter, and when he is healthy, a good defender. I just think that that is the team that we should be talking about atop the Eastern Conference, which we are. I don't think it's the Knicks.
Real quickly, Zach, before we hit a break and talk Wimbledon on the other side, VJ Edgecombe, third overall pick to Philadelphia. You know, here we go again, another thought of, do we trust this Philadelphia team? I did take a little 12-1 on them to win the East. What do you make of that fit with Edgecombe going to Philly, and what do you expect from the Sixers?
I really like Edgecombe there. I think he's going to help a lot. They have two guards there that are very good offensively in Maxey and McCain, but don't really play defense. They need a guy that's just going to do all the dirty work for them, and that is Edgecombe, who I also believe is very good offensively. I think that we've seen that when he played for the Bahamas in FIBA and a little bit at Baylor, where I didn't think it was the greatest fit in the world. But I do really like Philadelphia's team. I was in on them last year, probably longer than I should have been. I was still trying to buy a little bit when they were just, you know, suffering injuries left and right. But I don't think Paul George is, you know, as washed as people say he is. The truth is probably somewhere in between last season and the All-Star season he had with the Clippers before that. So if they could stay healthy, they're absolutely a factor.
More with Zach Cohen. He's going to hang out. We're going to break down Wimbledon. He's got a column up right now over at vsin.com. So we're going to do that on the other side of the break. Speaking of vsin.com, you can check out our betting splits over at vsin.com for as little as $9.99 for your first month. You see all the action coming in from DraftKings and Circa. vsin.com/subscribe. More with Zach Cohen on the other side as we get ready for Wimbledon starting tomorrow.
You're tuned in to the VSIN Weekend Morning Line.
Keep it rolling here, midway point of the VSIN Weekend Morning Line. We'll talk a little college football coming up in less than 15 minutes. Is there someone out there who doesn't believe in the Clemson Tigers? We found that person, and we'll play it for you coming up in less than 15 minutes. But let's continue the conversation with our good friend Zachary Cohen, who, by the way, shouts to Zach and all of our team, Adam Burke as well, busting their butt to get our NFL betting guide out. So we're almost to the finish line, Zach. Tuesday is when it's released.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to everybody seeing it. It's been tough work, but it's always good when everyone's just enjoying it and we're seeing, you know, positive, you know, feedback on it. So I'm looking forward to getting people's hands.
Zach, our senior editor at vsin.com, and for all of our content there. And right now he's got his column up on Wimbledon. We talked a little Wimbledon yesterday with Drew Dinsick, and now we're going to continue to getting excited with my microphone here. Let's talk a little Wimbledon with you. And I asked you off air, I want to start with the men's or the women. You said the women is a lot more open. So let's start on the ladies' side, and let's look at American and not Coco Gauff. She's coming off, of course, winning the French Open, but there's another American lady that does interest you from a betting standpoint.
Yeah, you're hearing my dogs barking. Maybe it's because Madison Keys is 20-1 in this tournament. I think has a real shot of winning it. I thought that Keys was going to win this tournament last year. I had her. She ended up injuring her hamstring, having to retire from her match against Jasmine Paolini, who ended up being the runner-up here. Keys is in Arena Sabalenka's quarter of the draw, which definitely does not sound all that great. But Keys has a pretty favorable draw up until the quarterfinals, whereas Sabalenka has an absolute gauntlet of just solid grass court players that she's going to have to face before potentially facing Keys. Sabalenka in round three could potentially have to face Marketa Vondrousova, who won this tournament 2 years ago. And along the way, there are also matches against players like Elise Mertens, Marie Buskova, just some very good players. And Keys has her best career winning percentage on any surfaces on grass. She has a lot of power, a really good serve, kind of has that championship DNA now that she won the Australian Open. I don't think she should be out there 20-1. I definitely don't think she should be there at 5-1 to win the quarter. So I'd be looking to Keys to win this this quarter and also win the tournament. Maybe the tournament plays more of a sprinkle, but 20-1 is really tough to pass up.
You know, Zach, talking to Drew yesterday, and I know you and Drew and so many folks love the handicap tennis, and it was interesting because he brought up Madison Keys as well, and he felt like Madison Keys Iga in a final, looking at that exacta, was of interest to him. What do you make of Iga's chances over at Wimbledon?
Yeah, I also have Iga to win because it was plus 800, and we just saw Iga play maybe the best grass court tennis of her life at Bad Homburg. She ended up losing to Jessica Pegula in the final. That's another player that I'm invested in this tournament. But Iga has always struggled on grass and quicker surfaces in her career, but she hired a new coach before this season to specifically address all that stuff. And I think that Iga partly suffered on clay because she's been doing so much tactically to get a little bit better on grass, to get a little bit better on hard courts. And I think now we're starting to see, you know, some of that pay dividends. So I thought she looked really good at the tune-up event last week. And I think she's got a real shot of going to the final. I agree with Drew. I also think Jessica Pegula, who I just mentioned, beat her in Bad Homburg. That's another player I'm looking at. This is the type of tournament where you're really better off just sprinkling the board than taking the favorites. Players like Coco Gauff, Mira Andreeva, some of the favorites at other events, just have not had much success on grass in their careers. And, you know, in Andreeva's case, is coming into this tournament struggling.
Make sure to check out his column over at vsin.com. He breaks it all down, all of the bets that he has. So let's get to Jessica Pegula, a little bit of a longer shot. You mentioned her a couple of times. Why are you interested in betting on her over at Wimbledon?
Yeah, so Pegula just won a 500-level event last week. It was a pretty big tournament with all the big names. She's always kind of been a player that I think has been good on grass. She has just like a very good way about striking flat balls deep into the court that make it very tough on her opponents to kind of set up and have time to get them back. And Pegula's serving better in 2025 than she has the rest of her career. And serving at Wimbledon is just absolutely huge, especially when you could do it on your second serve. Pegula can do that. And I also just think she's kind of due to break out at a slam in a big way. I know that she lost in the final of the U.S. Open, but she has never won one of these. I think that maybe this is one of her better chances to do it. So she was one of the players that I ended up kind of throwing a little bit on. I also have her to win her quarter at plus 500. Like I mentioned, she's in the quarter of Mira Andreeva, who comes into this tournament after having lost three of her last four matches. Also just a very young player, only 4-5 on grass. It's just a lot to expect her to do much of anything here.
Zach, for those kind of new to betting tennis, you've mentioned it a couple of times. Obviously, you've got the outrights, which are where most people probably put their wagers on, but you mentioned quarters. So how do you like to attack big tournaments like this?
I'll do a little bit of both, but yeah, so when I say win their quarter, it means make the semifinal, which is obviously a lot easier than winning the entire tournament. Sure. So if you like a player to, you know, make a run and you don't actually believe that they can, you know, go on and win the tournament, that's a really good way to look at it. Also, you know, some players just get really good draws. And like I said, with, you know, with Keys before, Keys somehow has an easier draw to the quarterfinals than the top seed Sabalenka. So that's why I like Keys at plus 500 there. Just the, you know, look at the bracket, you know, maybe fill it out. I do it every year. I fill out the brackets for every single tournament I'm handicapping. And it's a helpful exercise when looking to see how far you want to back a player to advance in a tournament.
All right, so once again, for all of his plays on the women's side, make sure to read it. He's got a bunch of different quarters to winners as well. Let's get to the men's draw, and let's go to maybe the greatest player of all time, Novak Djokovic. He is not the favorite to win this event. He's at plus 650 to win it. Carlos Alcaraz, who's won it 2 years in a row, he's plus 120. Jannik Sinner sits at 2-1. But let's look at Novak Djokovic right now at DraftKings, and as always, look around. He's at even money to win his quarter, the second quarter. He's plus 650, as mentioned, to win it. Do you think Djokovic makes a run over in England?
Yeah, I think Djokovic actually has like a relatively tough draw, but when he's on at Wimbledon, he is very difficult to beat. The only one that's really been able to solve him at all has been Carlos Alcaraz, but Djokovic looked very good at the French Open. He played the semifinals. I thought he played really well against Jannik Sinner. It was a straight set loss, but you know, not all straight set losses are the same. He had a chance to win that third set, and every other set was really tight. And that was also Djokovic coming off, you know, a couple of months in which his health was a concern, his play was a concern. He found his form in Paris and it just kind of ramped up there. And now I expect him to go on and continue to do the same thing at Wimbledon, where I think the conditions really suit him as an older player now, because he's not going to have to move around quite as much. He can kind of rely on his serving, you know, his pinpoint ball striking, and just the fact that he's just way more experienced on grass than everybody else. I mentioned to you off the air, grass court season is really short. It's 3-4 weeks. Not everyone's playing a lot of tournaments. Djokovic, as an older player, has had this, you know, the experience of playing this event, playing, you know, 5-6 matches like a million times. Not everybody else has had that. So Djokovic can draw on that to make a deep run. And he will face probably Jack Draper or Alexander Bublik at some point. Those are the two best players on the top half of his quarter. I like his chances against both of those young guys.
Wimbledon starts tomorrow morning, early hours. So Zach will be up. His eyes will be bloodshot for all the early hours. He'll be getting up and writing over at VSiN.com. So the first quarter is Jannik Sinner. He's minus $4. Novak Djokovic is in the second quarter. He's even money at DraftKings. And then the fourth quarter is Carlos Alcaraz at minus $450. So it seems like the one that is the most wide open, most unpredictable, best odds would be the third quarter. So looking at that one, Zach, is there some bets to be made in the third quarter?
Yeah, so the third quarter is open because Alexander Zverev just is not trustworthy at the Grand Slam level anymore. Like, it's gotten to a point where, you know, mediocre players or average players believe that they can beat him. So it really feels like he could be tripped up at any point along the way. And there is a match, you know, somewhat early in the tournament that if we do see it, I can see Zverev losing. That's against Matteo Berrettini in the third round. Berrettini is a big server that's been a runner-up here before. Beat him in Monte Carlo a few months ago. That's where I view Zverev as being on upset watch. And I also think Taylor Fritz, who's the top seed in this section, or the top player in the top half of the draw, just won a tournament in Eastbourne, but has a really tough draw. He's going to face two very big servers in the opening two rounds. That's very dangerous at a server-friendly tournament. So I think that, you know, quarter three is where someone going to, you know, maybe surprise some people. And it's not even really a surprise, but I like Daniil Medvedev to be the one to come through that section. I think Medvedev is starting to kind of play like a top 10 player again. He's been in and out of that top 10 over the last couple of months. But when he is playing well, he's really tough to beat on grass.
All right, Zach, before I let you run, Carlos Alcaraz has won it 2 years in a row. He's plus 120. Jannik Sinner sits at 2-1. You mentioned Novak Djokovic at plus 650. Who do you think ultimately wins Wimbledon?
So I played Djokovic at plus 650, but that was really more of a number grab. I do think it's going to be Sinner over Alcaraz, and the reason I'm not taking Sinner is because I think you're still going to get plus 130, plus 140 if he does face Alcaraz in that final, just because of the recent head-to-head, what everyone remembers from that French Open final. I think you're going to get plus money odds on Sinner, and you just should just wait and not have to worry about the first 5-6 matches.
At Betting on X is where you can follow Zach and read his work over at vsin.com. Zach, appreciate it, man. Best of luck with your bets.
Thank you.
There he is, Zach Cohen. Great stuff there. Talking some NBA, talking some Wimbledon. And once again, if you want to sum it all up, he's got his column up over at vsin.com. All his best bets for Wimbledon. Hey, folks, before the line moves, the sharp plays at sharpplays.com was already there. They don't chase the market. They move the market. You're not going to outmuscle billion-dollar sportsbooks or full-time professional bettors on your own, but with Sharp Plays, you don't have to. SharpPlays.com, trusted by pros, watched by the books. Check them out now, SharpPlays.com. Is there someone who actually doesn't believe in Clemson this year? I'll tell you who next.
VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Happy Sunday, all. It is Tim Murray, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Hour three coming up. We'll talk to Thomas Gable, get the latest from behind the counter, as well as checking in with Todd Furman, the Bet the Board podcast. Word on the street, we'll be getting an episode from that podcast feed later on this upcoming week. You'll also be getting a new episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast coming out here later on this week as well. Real quickly, before we get to a little college football chatter and a best bet that I threw in to the podcast earlier this week, LeBron James picks up his $52.6 million option. So here is what has been said from Rich Paul to ESPN with the news coming out that LeBron James is exercising his player option for $52.6 million. LeBron wants to compete for a championship. He knows the Lakers are building for the future. He understands that, but he values a realistic chance of winning it all. We are very appreciative of the partnership that we've had for 8 years with Jeannie Buss, Rob Pelinka, and consider the Lakers as a critical part of his career. This will be, by the way, a record-setting season for LeBron, as he will become the first player to ever play 23 seasons in the NBA. He does have a no-trade clause, so that is worth noting there. Not that I imagine LeBron would be traded, but we will see. Bobby Marks did tweet out just the kind of looks of this Laker team. And look, do I think they're going to win the NBA championship? No, but this was the 3 seed in the Western Conference a year ago. Luka Doncic, as I think Zach put well, you seem to look at some of the videos coming out of Luka. It looks promising in that regard. They traded up to get Adu Thiro out of Arkansas, so they certainly had some belief that Thiro would be a guy that could potentially contribute this year. So curious to see what they do. I know Brook Lopez and Clint Capella, also names that Zach mentioned, could be guys that they bring in from a frontline standpoint. So we'll see what they ultimately decide to do here, the Lakers. But not that big of a surprise, but ultimately the news coming out today, LeBron James coming in. Lakers offseason with LeBron opting in, courtesy of Bobby Marks. Lakers have the $5.7 million tax mid-level exception. If Dorian Finney-Smith opts in, he has a player option. They will have $14.1 million non-tax mid-level exception if Smith opts out and signs with another team. So we'll see ultimately what happens there with Dorian Finney-Smith. So not a ton of maneuvering there for the Lakers, but obviously acquiring Luka Doncic last year in the worst trade, in my opinion, in NBA history from Nico Harrison and the Dallas Mavericks. So LeBron James opting in to his $52.6 million player option. So throughout the past couple of weeks here in this particular spot of the show, we have been looking at college football, as we are now 55 days away from the first regular season college football game, week zero. We get Iowa State, Kansas State. We get Hawaii and Stanford. We have Kansas and Fresno State. It was noted earlier this week that UNLV and Idaho State will be playing in week number zero because of the Canelo Alvarez-Terrence Crawford fight that'll be taking place at Allegiant Stadium on September 13th. So that game has been moved to week zero, August 23rd. But one common theme this offseason has been the love for Clemson. And we'll run through it real quickly. Ari Wasserman from On3 joined my podcast. He was one of the first offseason guests. And at the time, Clemson's price was 20-1 to win the national championship. And I believe he said, hammer Clemson. So he took that at 20-1. We had Brad Powers on the show yesterday, all in on the Clemson Tigers. Me personally, I am also in on the Clemson Tigers. The first bet that I made this offseason was Clemson to win the ACC. So there's been this push of Clemson love. When you look at Bill Conley's returning production rankings, number one in the country, the Clemson Tigers. So is there anyone out there who doesn't believe in the Clemson Tigers in 2025? It's a lot of groupthink out there that Clemson is going to take care of business, going to get to the playoff. Right now, they're odds-on favorites to make the college football playoff. They're the betting favorite to win the ACC. Chris Felica, the Bear, he's got his questions about the Clemson Tigers. He joined me earlier this week on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
I am not there with Clemson. I can certainly understand why people might be. with how Klubnik and those young wide receivers came together last year. But I just, you dig a little bit deeper on what Clemson did last year. Yes, they did hold on and beat SMU to win the ACC title, but they were blown out by Georgia, were non-competitive at home against Louisville, and then they lost a game at home against South Carolina. Now they stole a game against Pitt, so that might offset the game that they lost at home to South Carolina. But they were one of those massive teams that had a big turnover edge last year, fourth nationally in turnover margin, so you can probably expect some regression. Last year, a bunch of the other wins were either bad non-conference opponents or the bottom of a bad ACC. I think you look at the schedule, you've got the opener against an SEC giant in LSU. The road schedule, Georgia Tech isn't a pushover. BC should be better again with O'Brien and now a different quarterback. Louisville's going to be better. South Carolina's still going to be good. You're looking at five potentially losable games right there. And the SMU game, certainly, I don't think will be a gimme. Like, 10 wins is going to be hard to come by.
All right. We found the opposition. I was wondering where it would come from, and leave it to the Bear to not be in on Clemson. And I mean that in the most positive way. That's what the Bear does. He's more of a contrarian. And look, when you continue to hear, and I'm guilty of it, a lot of the same people saying the same things about Clemson, it does make you want to look at the other side and the Bear looking at under 9.5 wins. I did ask him later on in that conversation, what would he rather do, play, miss the playoff or under 9.5 wins? And he personally said he'd rather go under the 9.5 wins. So check that out. The VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Chris Felica was my guest earlier this week. Also, Kelly Ford, Power Ratings at K Ford Ratings. I had him come on. He's not a bettor, but I thought his process for putting together his power ratings was pretty interesting. All right, I do want to hit you with this, because on the podcast, and we talked about one of my best bets yesterday, which was Nebraska over their win total. We've seen a little bit of movement on that front earlier this week as I laid $1.15 on over 7.5. I also laid $1.40 on under 5.5 wins for the Wisconsin Badgers. I broke it down more in depth on the podcast, but I'll go through the nuts and bolts here. So you look at their non-conference schedule. You only play three games in the non-con in the Big Ten. One of them, for Wisconsin, a road trip to Tuscaloosa. I'm going to go ahead and chalk that up as a loss. And then when you look at Wisconsin, and you're looking at trying to get back to a bowl game after having their streak of 22 consecutive years without a bowl, or going to a bowl, snapped yet last year, you're hoping for some of the weaker teams in the Big Ten. You get to play Maryland. Well, that's helpful. But you don't play Purdue. You don't play Northwestern, you don't play UCLA, you don't play Michigan State, and you don't play Rutgers. This team's schedule is as challenging, I'll be honest, as any schedule, in the country. Really, the only big boy that they avoid is Oregon. They play Michigan. No, that is Penn State, I beg your pardon. They play Oregon, they play Michigan, they play Indiana, they play Minnesota, they play Maryland. Well, they're not a big boy. They play Iowa, they play Washington, Illinois, and Ohio State. And for a Wisconsin program that is coming off a 5-7 season, went to the portal and added Billy Edwards Jr. as their starting quarterback, I got my questions, man. And there are a couple spots on this schedule, whether it be Iowa at home or Washington at home. Both of those games, they're coming off a bye. However, as are their opponent, I think it's going to be a challenging year up in Camp Randall. They did do well in the portal, top 15 portal class coming in. So we'll see how that ultimately plays out. But Wisconsin under 5.5 was a play for me earlier this week. Make sure to check out the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast wherever you get your podcast. Two best bets I handed out this week, Nebraska over, Wisconsin under on the pod. And just a reminder, folks, all our best bets are brought to you by our friends over at GBank, introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you need to do is open up a GBank Visa Signature credit card. In the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSiN will complete that trifecta trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through August 31st. That's a $200 value. If you want that $500 trifecta from GBank, FirstBet, and VSiN, head on over to VSiN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts.